Well, good morning, church. I didn't know how many verses that song had, Tommy. I was just kind of waiting the whole thing out. I was just ready to go for another. Yeah, you could have sang it 10 more times, and I still would not have got my part right. That is a difficult song, at least for me, to pick up and hear. But it is good to be with you all.
Great message.
Yeah, what's that?
It's a great message.
Oh, it is a great message. Absolutely, it's a great message. Let's redeem that song. I think that's a beautiful song. It's just hard to sing. Yes. Great. Where were we? Oh, yeah, I'm preaching. It is good to be with you. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad for your joining us online that you're there and pray that our time together is a blessing for all of us. I tell you what, I'm excited. This is, of course, an amazing time of year. I'm glad to have my son is home. My daughter took off. And she made a little trade, and she'll be back. But it's good to have family in. Some of you are getting that blessing of having family come in and kids come home from college, and that's all wonderful. Some of you are going to be traveling, I know, and we'll pray your safe journey and that you are blessed in your family gatherings wherever it may be. I am really looking forward to next Sunday. Is going to be Christmas Sunday. Isn't that hard to believe? Has it snuck up on anybody else? Next Sunday is Christmas Sunday, and we are really excited about the time we're going to have together. We're going to try to do something really special. There's no Bible classes, as Joel told you, but we want to do something really family-friendly next Sunday. It's not going to be long. Tommy's not going to sing any hard songs, and it's going to be really good for us to be together and celebrate. And if you think about it, it's pretty fitting. Of course, the name Christmas was derived from the Christ Mass, was the original name. It was the gathering for worship when they celebrated the coming of Christ. And a lot of people point to the pagan origins of Christmas, and certainly there was a winter solstice celebration. And when Christian missionaries came in and they saw these pagan celebrations and how they were devoted to their pagan gods, they thought there's something really that is worth celebrating, but it's not these gods. Let's teach them about the Christ. And so they taught them about the Christ and said, you want to celebrate? That's great. Let's just celebrate something that is real and significant. And thus the Christ Mass was born. And we celebrate the coming of the Christ. Now, for those of you like myself who grew up in a Church of Christ background, or there are some other groups that don't really follow a liturgical calendar. We don't, place any great emphasis upon Christmas or Easter. But I tell you, I think in looking beyond some of the histories, I think we've missed out on the importance of this season and how powerful a testimony it can be when we seize upon this opportunity to lift up a God who became man. Some of you are like me, you're older, and maybe you're old enough to remember that 35 years ago this movie came out. It was called Three Men and a Baby, and it was great. It had these three all great movie stars, Tom Selleck, Ted Danson, and Steve Guttenberg. And I did not know that it was directed by, anybody know? Leonard Nimoy. Anybody have that on your bingo card this morning? Right, Leonard Nimoy, and the movie essentially told the story of these three bachelors who suddenly find themselves taking care of this baby girl. And of course, they get into a bunch of funny situations trying to figure out how to parent, and none of them was remotely prepared for this and how they were going to take care of this child. It became a huge box office success, bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars. And you could argue about what exactly made the movie such a success. But ultimately, it came down to the fact that it was three confirmed bachelors having to completely rearrange their self-centered lives to take care of a baby. And if it's one thing that you and I know, and there's some things in there we could relate to, because as we all know, taking care of a baby changes everything, doesn't it? Babies force you to reorder and reprioritize your lives. My wife and I had been married for 7 years before we ever had kids, and I had been in full-time youth ministry that entire time. My wife had completed a degree in elementary education. She'd opened two different preschools and run two different preschools. I was pretty sure we were more than prepared for this. Spoiler alert, we were not. When the babies come, your bills change, right? Your sleep schedule changes. It changes how and when and if you travel or what you go and see and do. It changes all of your daily routine. It changes. Babies change everything, don't they? And so is it any wonder that when God chose to enter into human history, when he put on flesh and became a man, he did so in the form of a tiny, vulnerable, weak baby. It has now been over 2,000 years since baby Jesus was born, and he's still changing things, isn't he? He's still reordering lives, rearranging priorities. And this morning, I wanted us just to reflect briefly on that idea just a bit. How, if any, the coming of baby Jesus has made any difference in your lives and mine. How has his coming changed us? And I thought first of this passage from John chapter 3, verses 16 through 18, some of which I'm sure you'll recognize and know really well. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because they have not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. We tend to take this for granted. We know John 3:16. I mean, it's become popularized, even in culture and in movies. I mean, you can see John 3:16 on t-shirts and at football games. And we take for granted, though, that the creator of the universe, the God of heaven and earth, came down to earth in the form of a baby because of his love for broken people like you and me. In other words, for the first time when Jesus arrived, we came to realize that love was the basis for our relationship with God. That when Jesus came as a baby, we now related to God by love. It was in love that God sent his one and only Son. For most of human history, that has not been the case. For most of human history, our relationship to the gods, the powerful beings that control everything around us, right, that has been defined by fear. You hope to appease the gods, to be on your side and to do your bidding, and they would do so based on what you could do for them. Could you do something for them? If so, they might do something for you. But when God sent his Son down to the earth in the form of a baby, all of that changed. It was not us reaching out to him. It was him reaching out to us. He was the instigator. He was the one who wanted the relationship, and not because of anything we could do for him, but because of what he could do for us. He wanted a relationship with us because he wanted to give us. And this has been such an integral part of the Christian story that we look past this monumental change in the way people relate to the gods. We became related to God by love. I was talking with someone recently, just after church, and about sometimes we get those special relationships in life where we find people who love us and whom we love, but they're not related to us in any way. You know, those people. For me and my family, we've been really blessed and met and been adopted into all sorts of families over the years, families that have invited us to family gatherings. We've been to birthdays and holidays and gone on family trips with people who are not in our family, right? Families that have opened their hearts and their homes to us. They've listened to us. They've advised us. They've helped with our kids. They've helped with our marriage. They've helped us become a better family. They've helped us be better witnesses to our community. They've just made a huge impact on our lives, and those relationships are priceless because they don't owe you anything. They're not your parents or your grandparents or your aunts and uncles or your kids. They just love on you, right? The fact that God chose to, without any obligation, God chose to relate to us in the form of a helpless baby. He could have related to us in a lot of other ways. I mean, God could have just put on this magnificent display or power. I mean, God could have shaken the whole earth and said, quit it or else, right? Like my dad driving the car when we were on a trip, he could have turned around and said, don't make me pull this car over. God could have changed the way he related to us and just sit down this legal book from above that had all the rules and all the regulations, all the do's and all the don'ts, and just said, let that be it. Follow this or else. I mean, God could have done that. But God wanted more than slaves who cringed in fear at the master's hand. God wanted sons and daughters brought into his kingdom, into his home, into his family. And the coming of that baby changed that. It changed everything. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 9 says, for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for our sake he became poor, so that you, through his poverty, might become rich. In the coming of baby Jesus, not only did we witness the love of God, but we were given the gift of grace. Now, grace, by definition, has to be a gift, right? Grace has to be a gift. But the scales, the dimension of this gift were just beyond our comprehension. Kings do not set aside their crowns for peasants. Lords do not abandon their estates for servants. The wealthy do not give up their fortunes for the impoverished. That's not the way it works. Now, sometimes you'll find really good wealthy people who might give some. They might give something they don't need. They might give, you know, the change in their pockets or the few loose bills in their wallet. But we're not talking about pocket change here. We're not even talking about a big sacrificial gift here. We're talking about a wholesale abandonment of everything in favor of poverty. That rather than holding on to his riches, remaining empowered on a throne, separated from all the troubles and the worries of this world, God's Son chose to give up all that he had and take on all that we had. He became poor so that we might become rich. He became weak so that we might be empowered. He became helpless so that we might be helped. When the World Trade Center crumbled to the ground that terrible day, 3,000 people, over 3,000 people lost their lives. But there were a few who were buried beneath the rubble who miraculously survived. Two of those people were a pair of Port Authority employees who they had responded to the initial attack, and they were over there trying to help, and then the South Tower fell and trapped them. They were trapped without water, and they were breathing in this smoke-filled air, and they really had little hope survival. But as they lay under this mountain of debris, there was something that was stirring in an accountant in Connecticut. David Carnes spent 23 years in active duty in the Marines. And he was watching everything on TV, the whole thing, just like the rest of us. But it really troubled him. And he decided he was going to do something about it. So he went to his boss, because he was at work, and he told his boss, I'm not going to be back for a while. And then he just leaves. And he goes home, and he puts on his fatigues. He's no longer in the Marines, but he's still got his fatigues. He goes home, and he puts on his uniform, his fatigues. He drove 120 miles an hour to ground zero. And he got there by late afternoon. And he got there about the time that all the rescue workers were completely worn out and they were being called off the scene. But he was able to stay because he had some clout and he had his uniform. And pretty soon he found another Marine. And the two of those guys, they just joined forces. And they just started walking around the debris together. Didn't really know what they were doing. They were just trying to save someone. And after an hour of searching, they heard this faint tapping of a pipe. Just really, nope, it's not on. This really faint tapping. And it was Will and John who had been in there now for 9 hours. And this Marine who had been working a spreadsheet just hours before began to dig, and they freed these two men. There were only 20 people who were pulled out of the World Trade Center rubble. Altogether, thousands of people in there, only 20 people who were rescued. Will and John were numbers 18 and 19, all because Dave Carnes took off his suit, put on his fatigues, rolled up his sleeves, stepped into the despair and the darkness of Ground Zero. And in the same way, only infinitely greater, God took off his royal robes. He stepped into the dark and into our depraved culture and served us. We were buried in the depths of our own foolishness, of our own sin, with zero chance of survival, until God came down in the form of a helpless baby. We were without hope until the Holy One clothed himself in humanity to rescue us, until he became sin for us. And that's the truth of Jesus' arrival. It was all that we could have wanted, and yet it was nothing that we expected. Because God just does not become nothing, right? The infinite does not become finite. And yet God did. He gave and he gave and he gave his riches, his throne, even his very life, all that he had. And that's the gift of grace that we desperately needed. The coming of this baby does change everything. Remember that at that time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel, and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in this world. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who were once far away have been brought near by the blood of Christ. Finally, we need to recognize that the arrival of Jesus was the arrival of hope, and what that meant for you and me. Now, it's a terrible thing to be hopeless. Our world is filled with people who are teetering right there on that brink. They are living without hope, without purpose, and without a future. And without that baby in a Bethlehem manger, you and I would be as well. We would have no hope for a reconciliation with God. We would have no hope for a reconciliation with our fellow man. We would have no hope for ever being better, being healed, being changed into something better, and no promised future. We wouldn't have any of that. That's precisely how we would be, and it's precisely how we were before his arrival. We take for granted this promised home with God, take for granted his promised spiritual healing and giving us a life of purpose. We just assume that's always been there, but it hasn't. Think for just a moment how different your life would be this morning if you didn't have that. Now, granted, you wouldn't be here, and so you'd have a little extra free day, but you wouldn't have Sunday off. Think about how different your life would be. How would you interact with other people? How would you get back up when life beat you down? How would you handle when things went wrong? How would you handle the loss of a job, the loss of a relationship, the loss of the life of someone you loved? If you think about it, our every motivation and reason for going on is based on the singular hope of Jesus living up to his promise and coming again. Every motivation, every hope arrived in the form of that baby. His birth, in a way, announced our rebirth. C.S. Lewis put it this way. He said, "The Son of God became a man that men might become the sons of God." The Son of God became a man that the men might become sons of God. That is our hope. That is all we have and all we could want. All we were made into all we could be. This morning, we look back at that quaint scene in the manger, and sometimes we reenact that in plays, and we set up scenes on courthouse lawns or in our yards, and we look back and we say, well, what a great thing. But it was not just a cute, quaint scene with farm animals and new parents. It was God made flesh. It was new life, new hope. It was new relationship with God. It was new grace, all poured out in such a vulnerable position. This morning, if you have been living without hope, without grace, without a relationship with God, I want you to know that that baby was sent for you. Not just to change the world, but specifically to change you. To give you a life and a purpose and a future. And if we can help you this morning, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?